Local poet, playwright, and social activist Peggy Douglas has written a play centering on the impact of the sweeping social changes of the 1960s on three distinct communities in Chattanooga, called After Work. The play centers on the white townies and mill people in the African-American community living on and around 9th Street. In a series of monologues, the characters in the play talk about their lives and their dreams. Richard Winham talked to the play's director, Rebecca Rouse, and one of the actors in the play, Erin Skelly.
In one of Erin's monologues, she portrays a townie girl, and she's trying to describe the difference between the townies and the mill work. They're both white communities, and they both run about the same economic wages.
Can you do that monologue for us, Erin? Do you have that?
I can do the whole one. It's kind of long, but I can do it for you. This is the very first monologue that I do in the show. The character is a little younger. She's a little more naive about how the world works. And she has this idea that townies are better simply because they can achieve TV life. Like, that's where their goals are set, is they all huddle around their black and white TVs and dream of living this perfect white middle class life, or whatever it is that they're searching for. So the monologue goes, townies live in modest bungalows north of the river. Most have televisions, watch Leave It to Beaver, Lassie, and Father Knows Best. Girls have crushes on Steve McQueen, the bounty hunter in Wanted Dead or Alive, and the hot rod driving, hipster talking Kooky Kookson from 77 Sunset Strip. Boys have crushes on Thyla Menninger, the gorgeous but greedy girl who struggles to find Dobie Gillis a job that will bring home oodles and oodles of money. Though not for her, she insists, more for her family. The 60-year-old daddy with a kidney condition, a mama not getting any younger, sister who marries a loafer, and a brother who recently became a public charge. At Sunday nights, women in pink curlies yell through screen doors at their old men saying, "Ed Sullivan!" Moments later, trays are set up in front of snowy TVs, ice cream is shoveled into Tupperware bowls as families wait for Elvis to paint a picture of success for working class folks, despite public opinion or current conditions. I guess what I'm trying to say is that townies don't have money, but in the hierarchy of Southern poor, we're the good kind of white, the kind you wouldn't mind living on your street. We eat cube steak and pork chops, have milk at every meal. Yes, we labor at factories and craft jobs, but never colored work or spinning mills. We set our sights on TV life, where children imagine their mothers smiling sweet like June Cleaver saying, "Buck up, kiddo, everything's gonna be all right." Never mentioning that we can only afford black and white admirals, those cubes of steel even Hoss Cartwright couldn't lift, with knobs the size of baseballs and vertical holds completely shot.
Rebecca Rouse and Erin Skelly are both recent graduates from the theater program here at UTC. They're both in their early 20s, but they both connected to the world presented in the play because they saw parallels with the world in which they both grew up here in Tennessee. For Rebecca, one of the deepest resonances was the cultural and religious references, which she found so familiar.
I found in a lot of the language of the mill and townie communities a lot of familiarity with some of the music that Peggy mentions, some of the hymns and the Baptist life, since that's what I was raised in. I was very connected with the psychology in that, of the ideals of suffering and suffering for a reason, and everything being for a certain reason, and that submitting to that is an act of faith, and that there's an appropriate amount of shame to be had just in being, that I think kind of pervades some of the aspects of that life. And then at the same time, in the 9th Street monologues, I found a lot of culture that I wanted to know more about. And then I thought, this is interesting, because the only context I've heard of these specific things in is really within a broader white culture, and that I didn't have a context for them in what they meant in the social movement for Black Americans in that time period. And I only really knew them for the maybe caricature that they carry today outside of the social context.
Peggy's white.
Peggy is white. And that was...
But she had a deep understanding of Black culture because she was involved in the civil rights movement of the 60s, right, fairly heavily.
Well, I think that was one of the most interesting things while approaching the script was going into it knowing that, yes, this white woman had written monologues for Black actors, which at face value is a, uh-oh, there may be a severe discrepancy there. But I found that, well, first in talking with Peggy, she very upfront recognized that I know that I, as a white woman writing these words, that I need to be checked, you know, by anyone who's going to read them or anyone who has, you know, an opinion and context in living that kind of life and those experiences. So right off the bat, I knew that she was open to her fallibility in that area, but that she had also welcomed insight in having friends and colleagues read the material and kind of cross-check, well, is this the kind of language that a Black person would use to describe themselves earnestly? But another thing I had to consider was that these words, albeit written by a white woman, would be translated to stage by Black actors.
And what kind of reaction did you get from Black actors to the script?
From the actors? They received it very well. First rehearsal, I set out immediately, if there's any language you do not identify with or find entirely odd, bring it up. Bring it to me at once and we'll have an open dialogue about it. And Peggy was open to changing things if such an occasion arose.
So what I'm getting is that you grew up in the Baptist church.
I did.
So this is interesting to you because it's allowing you to delve into your parents' and maybe even your grandparents' lives.
Yes.
While at the same time, you have Black actors who are going to have the opportunity to do the same thing.
Exactly. I think the real virtue in this project of it being its first production is that it does carry this workshop nature where the actors of the Ninth Street community are bringing, well, I mean, as in any actor's work, but particularly this one with its workshop nature, they're bringing their life experiences and their, yes, the context of what they know of their parents and their grandparents and all their experiences to the words. And because really in theater, I mean, most of the story isn't on the page. You know, that's the difference between reading a Shakespeare in class and seeing it on stage is there's layer upon layer of subtext. And
right. But where Shakespeare is referencing Elizabethan England, which, you know, there's right. No way you have any connection to that.
Mm-hmm.
This is pretty close to you.
Exactly. And the actors, many of the actors grew up in this area in Chattanooga and have generations, really, of their family in the community.
What drew you to this, Erin, the monologue you're just delivering? That's your, it's probably your grandmother, right? Would be, although that young girl, I guess, maybe be your mum.
Yeah.
And that's her view of things.
Yeah.
That was the world that we were all presented. Television presented a kind of idealized portrait of middle-class existence, didn't it?
I remember growing up, I watched Leave It to Beaver and Andy Griffith because that's what both my mom and my dad really love watching those shows because that's what they grew up watching. So getting to do this monologue with those connections, it really brings to light what was happening in that time period because when you see these, especially when you're on stage trying to portray this, I mean, talking to my mom and my dad and them going through this experience, it's just, you actually understand that this was something that people thought was achievable, like Andy Griffith life or Leave It to Beaver life. Like they genuinely strove to live those kinds of lives. And like I recently watched an episode of Leave It to Beaver with my dad where June Cleaver's in her heels and pearls going and, you know, cooking dinner and doing the laundry. And I'm just like, that, I couldn't even, like, it's completely different from our time period now. But just because it's different doesn't mean that it still doesn't have value or it doesn't teach something that we can use in our time period. And I think that's one of the great things about this show is that, yes, it is set in the 60s, and yes, it is set in Chattanooga, but the morals and the values that are trying to be lifted in this could apply to anywhere at any time. It's a very interesting show about, you know, segregation and trying to make things more equal and mm-hmm. things like that. So that was one of the things that really drove interest me in it, was the idea that just because it's about, you know, the 1960s civil rights movement doesn't mean it doesn't have value for our community now. And especially of it being about Chattanooga. I haven't grown up in Chattanooga, but I came here for college and I've lived here for 6 years. And it's really interesting to learn just about the history of the entire city. It's just being able to act it out and kind of connect myself to that era is just really, is really interesting. And I really
enjoy the disconnect's definitely interesting. I've seen Barbara Billingsley interviewed, and she thought the idea of somebody wearing heels and pearls while they're doing housework was absurd,
mm-hmm.
even though she played it, you know, on the television. But and that disconnect between some sort of idealized version of American culture, which was how I understood America until I came here, and I said, wait a second, it's not really like that, is it? The play is called After Work. In addition to the monologues, it also features music of the period performed by a group of musicians and singers, including Lynn Womp, Christy Burns, and Kathy Veazey. It opens this Friday evening, August 14th at 7:30, in Barking Legs Theatre on Dodds Avenue. There'll be two more performances on Saturday, August 15th, and Sunday, August 16th. Details are on the Barking Legs website. For WUTC's Around and About, I'm Richard Winham.